You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Thanksgiving. Welcome to All Marine Radio. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hope you have a nice day planned, or get a chance to hang out with family and friends, and also get a chance to reflect on all the things that have blessed your life in the last year, which is what the holiday is all about, which makes it the coolest of all holidays, Thanksgiving. I talked to the chef this morning. He's like a unhappy little camper. And the reason he's an unhappy little camper is he's not able to join us, which doesn't make him happy, so... Anyway, a shout-out to the chef who's got back issues. And again, as I said yesterday, if you're looking for Thanksgiving cooking advice on anything, just go to the All Marine Radio website. And in the podcast page, on the podcast page, in the search box, go ahead and just type in Thanksgiving. And you'll see a litany of things. Just keep going through the whole list, from turkey to brining to gravy to side dishes to scalloped oysters to what else, whatever you could want is in there, I swear to God. Gravy in particular, which is one of the keys of the Thanksgiving meal. So the chef this morning, he called me early, and he expressed his regret at not being able to join us, which he does not particularly care for. So anyway, and wanted me to pass along to everybody, happy Thanksgiving. So from the chef, happy Thanksgiving. I only had one ear in my headset working, and it was kind of messing me up. Like, I was tilting to one side. That which, you know, like, is normal, usual, customary, and reasonable, normal, I guess. I don't know where that term comes from. Is that a financial term? Maybe. But anyway, be that as it may, good morning on this Wednesday before Thanksgiving. For everybody working, I don't think I have to tell anybody this, but I will just in case, right? Not a whole lot of work getting done today. Because if you don't know that, then just take it from me, right? The day before Thanksgiving, we go and people bring treats, and really the beginning of the holiday season. And right? After after tomorrow, it's what? Hey, Merry Christmas. That's right. So the holiday season. And so today's like a festive day at work, right? Yeah, I think it is. It's certainly not. It's a day of visiting. It's just a day of visiting and hanging out. And so the Montana man says rosemary in the gravy. He's on probation again. He seems to always be on probation, that guy. Yeah, he like bagged out of like all cook talk. And then I got an email. Hey, Mac, I know the chef can't be on, but you know, Montana man's a great fill-in. Oh yeah, he is. And so he tells me, well, I've got to get a bull or a calf tested to get there, do a semen test on a bull. So now the morning shows up, the next day shows up. Right, 7:43. You think I've heard from that dude? No. So I sent him a text. So at what point at the last minute are you going to tell me you're not coming on? Oh, how about now? Like, really? So, yeah, it's conduct like that. Conduct unbecoming. Yeah, of a Montana man that's going to get you re-nicknamed. Connecticut boy. Exactly. So anyway. So he's hunting, doing something. But yeah, rosemary in the gravy, probably not. So anyway. And he's on probation anyway. So I mean, he doesn't even get a vote. Like, what's that? This is really interesting. So yesterday I was talking about, right? I'm talking about how I was looking for General Burger's address at the ground board, at the ground awards dinner, whatever. I don't even know what the hell it is. And so all of a sudden, yesterday, I get an email. I'm looking for the email now. It was from the Marine Corps Association. Here it is. I get this at 2:45 p.m. yesterday. General Berger's remarks at the 2019th annual ground dinner. And I'm thinking, Now, it's the 26th when they sent that out. The ground dinner was the 21st. Did somebody was listening? I think somebody was listening. Dahlmer Radio. Hey. Anyway. So, no, I appreciate it. So you'll hear that this morning. You'll get to hear, General Berger's comments about, and again, you know, this to me, you know, we downsized the United States military. Everybody got to play in whatever we do. Right. And everybody's got to be able to be a generalist to a certain extent, and that you can be a snowflake, but only a certain percentage you can be a snowflake. So what does that allow the Marine Corps to do? If you got to be a generalist throughout the world, and, Marine Corps, come on, you're going to fight major land battle. Ugh. What do you mean? We don't do major land battle. What? Yes, you do. Oh, no. We do windows. We do, like, we shoot down ship. We sink ships. We shoot down airplane. You know, naval stuff, right? Yeah, no. Come and play in the big bathtub with everybody. Oh, we gave up those capabilities. Oh, what do we do? So, yeah, that's the question. How does this thing balance out with the National Defense Strategy? So, and what will Congress say? So anyway, under that, guys wanted to hear what General Berger had to say, because I heard he had said stuff. And I'd read he had said stuff. And so my thanks to whoever maybe was listening. Or maybe it's just a coincidence. Now, I think most of you know that the Iraqis cured me of believing in coincidences, right? Yeah, those don't really happen, and people who believe in coincidence are rubes, right? Are rubes. Oh, Montana man, he's calling cattle to sale this morning. Well, good luck to him. I hope it makes you rich, okay, because he worked a lot relative to his cattle. And I hate to see him come up. I hate to see him come up with not so much. He'd be one disappointed Connecticut kid. Yeah, that's what he would be. And then he's going to tell me, I'm not even from Connecticut. Whatever, dude. That's your new nickname. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. The General Berger's going to talk. And then the Lynch and Kenny event is going to happen live today, as a matter of fact. Yeah, not even taped. And let me tell you, that's not always the most comfortable event that we do live, that this program does live, because sometimes that thing, people forget where they're at. Like, don't forget that we're actually, like, broadcasting this. So that should be exciting. What else going on? Oh, you know, I've watched a lot of the discussion about Secretary Spencer and his quote unquote either resignation or firing. Okay. Bottom line, he was fired. Okay. So here's the sequence of events. So Esper argues that the president needs to let this process go through. Now, if you believe that, like, Spencer talked to Esper and Milley, although he doesn't really need to talk to Milley. Milley's got nothing to do with it as chairman. But, or maybe he does. Yeah, maybe he does. So, but Spencer would talk to, right, his civilian counterpart. All right. And Milley might be in the room. Or might not. Who knows? So anyway, they're having a conversation. Dick Spencer says, hey, Mark, all right, this has to go through. He can't just for the sake of politics reach into the services and usurp good order and discipline by monkeying around with shit that he shouldn't monkey around with. Now, he has the right to set it aside, but he doesn't have the right. It's not right for him to come with the 8,000-foot screwdriver and say, stop doing that, because that forces me to do something unethical, right, relative to the oath that I took. And so if that happens, that means I got to resign. I got to call the president out and I got to resign. And Esper's like, oh, okay, well, I told him and we'll stand by to see what he has to say. Right. And now you have like the chumps at the White House calling over to Sec. Now, hey, look, we're trying to manage this and the president's not happy with it. Right. Cause it's making it look like you're thumbing your nose at him. And, he can't have that in public. In private, he wouldn't give a shit. But in public, come on. You know this president. Him and the Twitter account, right? Him and his beast-like Twitter account. Okay, so let's figure out a way out of this thing, right? What do you want me to do? Well, he wants you to take action. He doesn't want to be forced to get involved in it. What we're going to do is we're going to allow this to go through. Right. And then what would we do? You want me to set it aside? Right. Or he says, I'll set it aside. And that way the president doesn't have to. But I'm going to say the president directed me to set this aside. And so that discussion's ongoing. And now, does anybody honestly believe that that got to Esper and Esper said, oh, that's not what my understanding was. You're fired. Does anybody believe that? Spencer doesn't get fired without Donald Trump saying fire his ass. And so this whole canard of, oh, he misrepresented it. Bullshit, man. I don't believe that. Right? Those discussions go on between the White House and whoever the White House wants to talk to all the time. And then somebody's going to say, oh, yeah, well, I was left out of the loop, or that wasn't the chain. Come on, man. Nobody believes that. Nobody believes that. Right? And so Esper standing on principle of Spencer misrepresenting. Come on, man. The truth is, right, Spencer, right, set the clock in motion when he allowed that to go forward. That pissed Trump off. Whatever phone calls that went on in between them happened in the normal course of business. And that was simply the pretense that was used by Esper so that Esper could take action. Well, then Esper gets told by Trump to fire his ass. For what? Well, you know, he's been having conversations. Okay. Well, okay, now that's the pretense. I got a pretense now. Okay, got it. Thanks. Thanks, boss. Yeah, bullshit. And again, good order and discipline. Not so much. And all for the sake of, and we all know, Trump doesn't give a shit about Gallagher. He's just another pawn in the game that gets played for political power that never stops in this country anymore. It will begin the day after the election, the evening of the election. It will begin our 4-year election cycle. So anyway, so I've been watching that commentary and it makes me laugh. It's like, oh, Esper went around the sector. Bull, come on, man. What, did you fall off the truck like 3 seconds ago?
I don't rightly know.
Right. With no insult intended to Jack Riley. Cause he kind of talks like that. Well, goodness, Mac. Jack, that's one word. I think it's goodness. Okay. No, not down here in Alabama. Anyway. What else going on? That's it. That and Thanksgiving. That's it. No, there's some other stuff going on. But none that comes to mind. So we'll start the program right now. And then we're going to hear, we'll check the weather. We'll check shithole weather. And then we'll, we'll hear the Commandant and his vision. And then we'll check a few news headlines. Yeah, we'll check a few news headlines. So good morning to you. Today's kind of Friday, right? Because this is the last day of the show of the week. So Whitney Houston sings the national anthem this morning. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Dedicated to Thanksgiving, right? Don't forget to be thankful for, even if your life sucks right now, right? There's good things in it. So don't forget to be thankful for that which is good in your life. And, right, oftentimes Thanksgiving is a time when you come across people that are struggling, right? Oh, you know, so-and-so's having a hard time. Don't be afraid to go up to them, right? And you know what to say. Hey, could I talk to you? And then whoop their ass with post-traumatic winning. Hey, you know there's nothing wrong with you. you know you're okay. So with that thought in mind, as you head out for the Thanksgiving weekend, don't be afraid to change somebody's life.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda any time you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran, but you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Thanksgiving weather around Marineland. That's what we're about to do. Currently, it is cloudy at 54 in Quantico. It is cloudy in 65 at Camp Lejeune. Sunny in 51 out in 29 Palms. Clouds at 52 at Pendleton. Camp Smith in Hawaii has three. No, they don't. They have two weather warnings. Dark, cloudy, and 73 at Camp Smith, so they're warming up. Okinawa's warmed up a little bit. Dark, cloudy, and 70. They have two weather warnings as well. In Lashkargah, in Afghanistan, it is cold, man. Been cold in Afghanistan. Dark, cloudy, and 44 early in the evening. That means it's going to get to freezing tonight. Well, maybe freezing. Probably not. Upper 30s, maybe, right? And in Iraq, in Ramadi. Dark, cloudy, and 67 in Ramadi. At the home of All Marine Radio, right? There's a flood watch in effect, beach hazard statement, marine weather statement, and a small craft advisory. So the real story is storm coming through the west. And normally it's much ado about nothing. So we shall see. We shall see. But remember, watch. There's no R in the word watch, so it's not real. It's just be prepared. That's in effect from 4 o'clock today, November 27th, till 10 p.m. on Thursday. Yeah, so let's look at your weather. We'll take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General David Berger, give a speech that where he kind of says, hey, this is what you need to be prepared for. And talked about it yesterday. And then magically it appeared. I looked for it on the internet, could not find it. And then it appeared. So I'm extremely grateful. So you'll hear the Commandant talk about the future of the Marine Corps. And then the question is, okay, how nuanced can the Marine Corps be? How nuanced will Congress allow the Marine Corps to be, right? So, more of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I want to walk you through a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and so be made. Of this heartbreak, I'm gonna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I'll scream, yeah, I'll let it all out. But right now it's just me.
Again, just a friendly reminder, okay? Just a friendly reminder. Holidays are a great time to change somebody's life, all right? So just pay a fucking attention. Got it? Pay attention. All right? Pay attention. Okay, now. As I do most days, I forgot to do shithole weather. So, from Chris, currently in Webster, Massachusetts. It's 80 miles from Plymouth, but nobody knows where Plymouth is, right? Oh, Plymouth, where Thanksgiving got started. Okay, got it. Where the fuck's Plymouth, though? Right? I know where Boston is. That's it. I mean, does anybody know another city in that shithole of a state? Hold on. Let me get my secret decoder ring out. No. Plymouth. I think it's on the coast, because isn't that where the pilgrims, like, showed up with their weird hats and belt buckles? Yeah. Try driving there today or tomorrow from anywhere. Good luck with that. It took the pilgrims less time to sail across the Atlantic. So everybody's got to go to Plymouth on Thanksgiving and feel that special feeling? Interesting. 44 degrees with a high of 49 today in Webster. Still gray skies with building clouds, fog, then rain expected overnight, winds normal, then building out of the east. Excellent stretch of weather coming over the long weekend. Chris from Webster out. Chris, what about a picture, man? Right? Do you not know the requirement, which is take a picture with your cell phone, attach it to the email. Nancy, she flaunts the rules too. Mac, please note, I can't use my cell phone camera without assistance, so I'll use my recovered English major vocabulary skills instead. No, Nancy, look, the last thing anybody needs is another excuse. Figure it out, Nancy, okay? Figure it out. Get me a picture. No excuses. In Pleasantville, where there's a lot to be thankful for, it's currently overcast, gray skies, light rain, 51 degrees, on the way to 55. Wind advisory now from 7 in the morning until 7 in the morning on Thanksgiving. Winds out of the south at 11, gusting to 21. Wind advisories out of the west at 15 to 25, gusting to 55. Whoa. And that is for northwest and southwest and eastern Pennsylvania. What? That would sound like all of Pennsylvania to me. CTL. I don't know what that is. CTL. Oh, Central Ohio. Overnight low temperature of 34. Erie is sharing the above today. Almarine Radio brightens my day. Brighten my day. Send a picture. Okay? Got it. All right. Note to self. And, oh, I thought the Vacaville guy, I thought he screwed it up too. He did not. He included another picture. He's in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Yeah, good morning, Mac. Today's weather in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is currently 35 degrees. Winds out of the northeast at 30 to 46 miles an hour. Light snow and cloudy. Be well and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Interesting. So that's a look at your shithole weather. Now, somebody, I think, texted me a shithole weather update earlier today. See, these are supposed to come to the live at Almarine Radio, right? But this is from Tim Adams in Mankato, Minnesota. There's about a foot of snow on his car. And then he sends me a screenshot that's too small for me to read. So, right, sent without comment. So let me just tell you, it's evidently cold in Minnesota. Okay, but it's about 28 degrees above zero. So you know what? It ain't that bad there. What I learned about Minnesota is, compared to North Dakota, where it's really cold, Minnesota's just, like, kind of cold. It's cold enough for it to snow, and then they all whine about it because they're Minnesotans, and that's what they do. And but it's not really as cold can be. All right, now, we're going to hear from General David Berger right now, and he's going to talk about his vision for the Marine Corps. All right, and this is at the Marine Corps Association Ground Awards Dinner. Right, and he's talking about inside force. So, in his own words, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General David Berger.
Those of us who know Roger, it doesn't surprise you that the mastermind behind force on force training is Roger Turner. Roger does force on force training to get to work in the morning. This guy lives that kind of a life. It is really remarkable what you pulled off in the last year. Sitting next to me, you should know. Is Vice Admiral Moran. Do you know why he's here? I didn't know. And I asked him, I said, what? He's here because your CNO asked him to be here.
Now remember, Admiral Moran was supposed to be the CNO and was his nomination was withdrawn. So that is not a small little thing that he's out and about representing the CNO.
And before I get started, I was thinking of the comments from General Faulkner before about how many people are in here, and it's great. And thank you for making the shift from Marriott, I think it was, initially, right? Marriott. And I was, you know, the inside part of me is like, it's a good thing it was a ground dinner, because if it was a Marine Air Board, they'd still be, at trying to put their stuff in some kind of tablet, and it wouldn't be like 40 people here. But, of course, we all have maps. We have compasses. We 550 of us are going to make it over here, right? Just kidding. Thank you for, just as General Smith said, the General Faulkner and the Foundation, remarkable job. And most of the people in here know, if it wasn't for them, I mean, literally almost, we would be doing this in a parking lot somewhere in Quantico inside of a tent, eating tray rats or some kind of nasty stuff. But they make it possible to bring together evenings like this, and I think it's really special. General Smith and his whole team, I'm glad you highlighted that, because PPNO is the one who kind of shepherds all the parts of the ground combat element. And the industry in here, I'll just say thank you to them, too. I'm right with General Faulkner. There was a time when we didn't talk to industry because we were afraid to. I was told, I'm sure taught not to, because you don't do that. That's how people get in trouble. But we're way past that now, where young Marines and engineers are like, are we even close? Let's do this faster. And it's a much better place than 25, 30 years ago. So in addition to the dinner tonight, I'm just thanking you for closing the gap between some engineer who has an idea how to make something and a Marine who needs something made, and everybody else get the heck out of the way, and things happen pretty darn quick. So I'm thanking you for cutting out all the middle layers. This evening I am going to talk a little bit about where we are and where we're going, and break some new ground. And I'll start by saying that my conclusion is this summer, coming in and talking with General Neller and a whole bunch of people in this room, is that the Marine Corps is at an inflection point and we must change. And that's what we'll talk a little bit about this evening. And for those in the room who are a bit concerned about the change that we need to make in the Marine Corps and what it might mean to our beloved ground combat element, I would tell you to calm down. It's not a zero-sum game. We'll make the changes that we need to. We may need to get smaller. We are going to need to trim some parts of the Marine Corps that we've had for a long time but are not a good fit for the future. All that we're used to doing. This is not the first time a Marine Corps has made some changes. But fundamentally, as General Smith tells us, we will remain an agile and a lethal force. That's what we do. And that all of that undergirded by the tactical excellence that General Turner's making sure we get from the squad level all the way up. Those parts don't change. I think it is a great time to be a Marine. You should be excited. You should be motivated. Because nobody moves out like the Marine Corps. Nobody leans forward into change like we do. And everybody in this room knows that when there are big challenges, in addition to the challenges, there are always opportunities. And this is what Marines do best. It is a great time to be a Marine. We always lean forward. We sense it's time to change. We get in front and we stay in front. And that's what we're going to do for the next coming years. This summer, beginning in July, we started a threat-based force design effort. Threat-based. At this stage in that, we're in the sort of latter part of the fourth quarter, where we have a 90-95% solution, and we're going through over and over and over again iteration of changing a couple of variables to make sure that against the threats we think we have to face, we have the structure right in our Marine Air Ground Task Force. So we're close. Tonight, I won't be able to share with you the details part of that, but I am going to share with you the logic behind it. And you will get a feel, I think, pretty quickly in the next few minutes of where we're going. I think the background, those of us in the room who are planners, you're gonna extract the framing part, the assumptions, the facts, the conclusions, all that stuff, and we're gonna cover this evening just in a bit of detail. First, let me say the beginning part of force design, why we need to redesign our Marine Corps. It is driven by China's pivot towards the sea. And that primary front, which they have opened up, is renewed great power competition, and you can add Russia, of course, to that equation. That combination has fundamentally transformed the operating environment in which the naval and the joint force must operate. Specifically, I think the Navy and the Marine Corps, and this is the hard part we got to come to grips with, really has to accept that presumptive sea control is no longer something that the United States can rely on. We will compete for it. And just as a reminder, presumptive sea control, our amphibious doctrine tells us that sea control, air superiority, necessities, right? They're prerequisites for success, along with surprise, along with dominance in the domains, and especially in spectrum. Put simply, in a sentence, my words, our naval forces today are not optimized for gray zone competition, and they are not optimized for conventional deterrence against a modern peer adversary. My conclusion. You know that China and Russia have carefully studied us for the past 18, 19, 20 years. They took good notes, fed that back into their systems, and built a force specifically designed to overmatch the United States. All that time, of course, the bulk of our focus was in the Middle East in a counterinsurgency effort. They were not detracted. They focused only on us. So for us, then, staying ahead for us means we're going to have new concepts and new approaches from the sea services. And I'm going to talk largely tonight about both the Navy and the Marine Corps in order to compete and in order to deter our peer adversaries. This is going to require us to operate outside our traditional kind of comfort zone. And we're going to have to embrace a new way of operating, a new mindset that's, in Admiral Gilday's, your CNO's term, integrated American sea power. That's where we must go. So here's a set of questions that we have wrestled with for the past 5, 6, 7 months. If that's true, then how can we leverage the various authorities and the capabilities of Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, interagency, how can you integrate all of them to show adversaries a new look and complicate their decision cycle? How do we employ all of that strategy afloat together with allies and partners in direct contact with peer adversaries? And not just their conventional military, but their paramilitary as well. Like you know, in a gray zone sort of environment, they're flooding the zone. How do we win the information battle? How do we inform, influence all of the neighbors of actions like China's coercive efforts? How do we accomplish that? And all this I'm driving towards is we're going to have to rethink the way that we approach warfare to some degree. I think we have to be prepared, of course, all the time to respond to threats across the entire spectrum of conflict, given. But our first priority as a naval service has to be deterrence. Why? This is actually a pretty simple conclusion. Because the cost of competition, the cost of deterrence, will always be lower than the cost of a conflict in terms of blood and treasure both. We should be willing to pay the cost of deterrence, in other words. So this means that our fleet marine forces follow the logic train with me, the fleet marine forces and the naval component must be able to operate inside the threats, the enemy's sensory and weapons engagement zones. That's where Marines are comfortable operating. It's how we can best support the naval force and the joint force and their scheme of maneuver. This is where your Marines belong, inside. So here's our basic premise. Our ability, this is a little bit complicated, but our ability to conduct sea control and sea denial operations, both from the sea and from key maritime terrain, is an essential naval capability in modern armed conflict. That's my premise. It's not a nice to have, it is essential. Particularly in close and confined seas. And when we use the term, you and me use the term sea control and sea denial, which the Navy has a doctrinal explanation for, you and me can translate it very simply into sinking ships, shooting down planes, killing enemy forces inside the area and stopping all other forces from coming in. It's pretty straightforward. That's what we do. So if that's the approach that I just laid out, what are the conclusions so far? I would offer to you three basic ones. First, the rise of peer competitors, and note I'm deliberately, intentionally not saying near peer. The rise of peer competitors means that warfare has undergone a paradigm shift that necessitates changes in the fundamental assumptions upon which the current force, the force we have this afternoon, is built. Second, improving what we currently have in an incremental manner, in other words, capability, capacity, in an incremental manner, will not suffice to resolve that challenge. Nor will connecting just new platforms with old ones or minor changes to our methods. None of them are going to suffice. Third, we're going to need new capabilities that we do not have right now. These are the means, of course, to fight in new ways, to generate basically better strategic choices for the joint force and the naval commanders. And by naval, I mean Marine and Navy. Put those three together, and you might conclude, I have, that we're going to have to first adapt and then innovate the force to actually bend the curve of future war in a new direction so we can maintain our competitive advantage. That is the genesis of force design. When you realize that incremental annual changes are going to put you farther and farther and farther behind, you stop, project deep, in our case, 10 years, and that's driving force design. The premise behind our force design effort as a naval force is stand-in or inside forces. I believe that what our nation needs is a future Marine Corps that is trained, equipped as a naval expeditionary force in readiness, and prepared to operate as an inside or stand-in force within contested maritime terrain in support of fleet operations. That's in a mission statement, that's it. All the war games so far over the past 18 months support that hypothesis and reinforce the conclusion that naval expeditionary stand-in forces can actually generate technically disruptive tactical stand-in engagements that really confront the aggressor with a new look in ways that they can't react to. These are low signature, affordable, risk-worthy approaches. Let me just put it in plain language that you and I can understand. Here's what this means. Our peer adversaries need to perceive a bunch of small, mobile Marine units in their backfield with low signatures, bad attitudes, and toolkits full of disruptive capabilities. That's what we have to generate inside where they operate in their backfield. Basically, throw a wrench into their entire game plan. These are inside forces, again, and we're going to need the advantages of emerging new technologies to get there, to make it an integrated naval force, as CNO tells us, optimized to operate inside confined areas. That is the Marine Corps' sweet spot as a corps. That is our unique contribution to the joint force. Let me talk a little bit then about force design. And I'm going to use two terms which are used in the Pentagon, but outside may be foreign. And those are investments, or things we have to put our resources into, and divestments, things we have to reduce. The outcome of the war game so far and all of our modeling and simulation tells us that we're over-invested. We have excess of capabilities that are purpose-built for large-scale, conventional, land-borne operations. You and I, some of us, think Desert Shield, Desert Storm. We were built, ideally, for 1990. Tonight, I'm going to go through a few areas just to give you a flavor for where I think we're going to need to make some cuts, to make some reductions, to divest to some degree. Surge layer capability in our reserves and also in the maritime preposition force. Our focus, our primacy, is as a contact to blunt force. We are the front lines. Manned anti-armor ground and aviation platforms, manned ground transportation, and associated all the movement parts and capabilities of that. Traditional towed artillery that we can't, if we can't, modify for hypervelocity projectiles. Short-range mortar systems that lack the precision that we need, and they lack the lethality and range that we're going to need. Non-lethal short-range UAS. Excess equipment that we today maintain in admin storage. Vehicles, aircraft, systems that we either can't afford to procure or can't afford to sustain over the life of the system. Those are where we got to make some reductions. So before anybody goes running for one of those little things on the wall that has like cardiopulmonary written all over it, before we do that, overinvested, when I tell you that these are broad areas where we're going to need to make changes, it doesn't mean go to zero. It means we have to make some adjustments. But we got to be rational about how we're doing it. Okay, so if those are the broad areas where we're going to have to think about making some adjustments in terms of reductions, what are the areas where we need to move towards? Where are we underinvested right now? Low cost, lethal, long endurance, unmanned combat aerial vehicles. Unmanned, lethal, and non-lethal ground and amphibious vehicles. Mobile and rapidly deployable rocket artillery and long-range precision fires. Unmanned aerial and ground logistics vehicles. Loitering munitions across every echelon of the force. Mobile air defense and counter-PGM capabilities, which we used to have, but without an air threat, we got rid of. We trimmed that way back. We're underinvested in that now. And that includes directed energy systems. Signature management capabilities. Electronic warfare capabilities, expeditionary airfield capabilities, and the structure that goes along with it. We need more lethal, risk-worthy surface vessels to include long-range unmanned surface vessels and other unmanned platforms, including subsurface. All that is where the naval force, in my view, our view, needs to go. If those are things we have to excess and other areas where we're underinvested in, where we're going to need to pour some resources in, let me just complicate it a little bit further for you. This is great power competition. We have a pacing adversary, a pacing threat. We have to figure out within our budgets if we are able to, can afford to, stay in front in every area. Or in certain areas, can we accept risk and let an adversary set the pace, wear themselves out, pour their resources into it, make the mistakes in front of us? We're not. That's territory we haven't been in 30 years. We have dominated every area. Great power competition is not simple. In some areas, we may choose to allow the adversary to punch in front and wear themselves out deliberately. But we're not used to doing that. I don't have an answer for it, but I'm just telling you, like you all already know, pure competition, great power competition, is not easy. So, The incremental minor adjustments that I talked about to our current force, that would only allow our adversaries to open up a wider and wider and wider margin 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now and pass us. And that we will not allow to happen. We have to, as General Mattis coined the phrase, expand the competitive space. And we have to always be prepared to win in the next war, not just get there. We have to win. To do that, we have to redesign our Marine Corps and focus our efforts as a naval expeditionary force. Timeline, 10 years. Now, this is not a 2 or a 3 or a 4 year horizon. And we will no doubt have to make changes along the next 10 years. Why? Because we have a pacing adversary. They're going to adjust off of us. This is not going to be a static, take a picture, fast forward 10 years, you know where you got to be. We're both going to be keying off of each other. In great power competition, it's all about relative advantage, right? Not absolute capability advantage, but relative, relative to the competition. All this meaning we can either find ourselves in the react mode or drive a threat to react to us. So that's where we are. I think in the next, I'm confident in the next 60 days, 70 days, we'll have the design of the Marine Corps complete and we'll move pretty quickly. In this current budget, you won't see much change. Next year, year after that, you'll see significant change. But again, not to hit the panic button, this is a 10-year evolution. So the areas that we need to thin down are not going to be done next week. We'll feather them, we'll draw them down while we increase another capability. But we must redesign our Marine Corps. Let me just finish up saying, first of all, if you could ask anybody to be guest tonight, I'm very appreciative, General Faulkner, that you asked us to be here. We have huge changes in front of us. I have the best two partners in the world, in the Sergeant Major and the CNO, and the best boss I could ask for, your Secretary of the Navy. All of them recognize it's time. We have to move. If we don't do that in the next 2 or 3 years, we will fall behind, and we are not going to fall behind. So thank you all for being here tonight. Thanks, industry, for what I'm thanking you up front for what we're going to need you to do, because we do not have all the answers tonight. We're going to need you to work with us.
That is the Commandant of the Marine Corps, David Berger, and him talking about the future of the Marine Corps. And so I was looking for that after reading a little bit about it. And you know what? The beauty of modern technology, man. Somebody went ahead and put that up. And you know, it's kind of interesting to watch him give that in terms of, you know, he knows that there's people that are genuinely concerned with, okay, so what does the Marine Corps become? You know, and so I think it's going to be interesting. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, he's right about, the Marine Corps has always evolved. And one of the interesting things about Marine Corps history is when you read about the visionaries of the Marine Corps, whether it be the Marine Corps' innovation of aviation support, whether it be the Marine Corps' you know, in the way the Marine Corps embraced amphibious warfare, all those things were things that were over the horizon at some point. So, you know, it's the legacy of the Marine Corps to go ahead and to look at the future, to seek ways to be relevant, and so this is nothing new relative to our history. And then also, you know, I think interesting questions about, you know, we've been so absorbed with counterinsurgencies in Iraq, the global war on terrorism, and so there's not, you know, we have to now run to catch up. Relative to the great power competition, because it's not something that we paid close attention to as we fought other fights. So it's interesting to hear him talk. So some of the things he talked about, the presumption of C dominance, C power dominance, is a thing of the past. That our advantage has to be an advantage that deters and not a marginal advantage that would allow somebody to think, yeah, we can go ahead and take them on. And interestingly enough, I was watching, and I'll talk to Jeff and Tim about this here in a few minutes, but Netflix has a series that somebody emailed me about. And so I started watching it, and it's really well done. And with historians and from each country. And so last time I was watching the episode about Pearl Harbor and then the episode about Midway, along with the one on Stalingrad. And I think I fell asleep in the Stalingrad one. But anyway, so it's interesting, you know, when you think about these things, to look back at, you know, the Japanese and, you know, what they thought they could do to the United States in World War II. The perception was that the United States did not have a great advantage over the Japanese Navy, and that the Japanese Army that had been so successful in Manchuria and northern China, you know, would not bow to an American army that was, you know, that had largely been disbanded after World War I. And so when you hear the concept of deterrence, you know, that's a George Marshall concept that, you know, Marshall, you know, talks about building the United States Army three different times. He built up the, I want to say the Rainbow Division, or helped put together as a staff officer, the Allied Expeditionary Force, the American component that went to, France in 1917 and fought in France. He does it again as a staff officer and then the chief of staff of, and really the first chairman of the Joint Chief, but he didn't wear that title. But Marshall is, he rebuilds the army a second time. And then post-World War II, we stand it down again. And then he rebuilds it again for Korea. And so the concept of deterrence is a Marshall plan, is a Marshall idea. And with the thought that, you know, we've got to be able to deter this and stop this. And the only way we're going to do this is to have standing forces and a robust military enough that if anybody even would think of it, they would quickly be dissuaded of the idea because of the power. So it's interesting when you reflect on that, where that comes from. And how that has worked in our history. One of the premises that the Commandant talks about is sea denial in close and limited terrain. In close and limited naval terrain is the role of the Marine Corps, right, in support of, in conjunction with, the United States Navy. His conclusions after looking at all of this, the rise of peer competition, and he doesn't say near peer, he says peer, right, very deliberately, that minor changes in the Marine Corps will only put us further behind, and that the Marine Corps has to fight in new ways. So what is the requirement, right? A, to adapt, right? So, and that's what he's talking about, force design. Those are the adaptations. And then bending the curve, right? Bending the curve, which makes it, right, which is where deterrence happens, right? He talks about being able to operate within contested areas. And that doesn't mean you're going to deploy from CONUS. It means you've already got to be there. The seventh thing I wrote down was a low signature and a bad attitude and the ability to disrupt. And then the next question is what you'll keep in the reserves and whatnot. And then how does Congress balance all this with the National Defense Review, blah, 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 blah. So we will, we'll take a break. When we come back, Jeff Kenney, Tim Lynch will join us as, we'll talk about some of that stuff, get their thoughts on Secretary Spencer going away. And there was one other thing I actually wanted to talk to him about, but we'll get to that as well. Hopefully I'll remember it. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.